CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. To Moscow, to Felix Leit of the Moscow Times and CBS News. Most importantly, Felix has just returned from a critical city in Russia, Rostov. Rostov on the Don. This is a major traffic fair, port city, reaching back before the Soviet Union, deep into the Tsarist Soviets, the Tsarist Russia. But right now, it is a point of view in Rostov that tells us where the Ukraine crisis is going. Felix, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for this. Your visit to Rostov was revelatory. I recommend everybody Felix's story in the Moscow Times, because if there are to be refugees, if there is to be a crisis of fighting in and around the former oblast provinces of Ukraine, Luhansk and Donetsk, you would see it in Rostov. Did you see refugees? Did you see preparation for refugees in Rostov? Good evening to you, Felix.
Good evening, John. Yes. So, you know, me and a number of colleagues traveled down there sort of at the start of the weekend, because on Friday, the separatist authorities in Donetsk and Luhansk announced that they wanted a sort of general evacuation of their sort of, you know, unrecognized self-declared state down there. They said that the Ukrainians were planning an attack. Obviously absurd. Why would Ukraine attack, you know, with almost 200,000 Russian troops deployed around their borders? But there was sort of talk of this, and it looked a lot like a sort of preparations for a Russian false flag, preparations for Russia to sort of, you know, fabricate a pretext on which to invade Ukraine. And on the morning after we arrived, a colleague and I from CNN, myself, I should say, and a colleague from CNN, we traveled to the border post, a little spot on a ridge sort of between Russia and Ukraine. And it was quite an extraordinary scene, because there were refugees, you know, there were a number of people coming through. There were, but this was not sort of a Kosovo situation. This was not Bosnia. This was not sort of hordes of desperate people. This was sort of people, you know, a smallish number of people trickling through in sort of twos and threes, crossing that border, the old women and young children mostly. And a lot of them simply didn't know what was going on. They didn't understand why they'd been evacuated. And you would ask them what's going on in Donetsk, and they would say, frankly, I don't know. They told us we needed to get out, and we went, but we didn't see the evidence of a war. We didn't see the preparation. And the other thing I think that struck me down there, John, was the extraordinary level of preparation from the Russian side. You know, on that border, we had sort of youth activists from a pro-Putin organization, you know, giving out chocolate on the border and helping old ladies with their bags. And we had first responders erecting these sort of disaster relief tents that no one was staying in. And it almost seemed to be a sort of a pre-prepared show. You know, they wanted to show the world that sort of something terrible was happening in Ukraine. But there was something missing, you know, because there just weren't that many people coming. And a lot of the Donetsk people who were standing there at the border wanted to go back. They were waiting for permission to cross back into this alleged war zone. So it was an extraordinary, a very odd and a very puzzling and vexing scene, I think, down there.
And in Rostov, did you see similar preparations for large numbers, tent cities, emergency water, that sort of thing?
Honestly, no, I can't see I did. It was an extraordinary sort of lack of preparation in this city. And, you know, the importance with the thing with Rostov is that Rostov has always been very closely linked to Russia's war in the Donbass. You know, Rostov is all of about 60 miles away from the border with Ukraine, the border with the Donetsk People's Republic, this breakaway state there. And the people there sort of have a lot of sort of links, a lot of family links to the Donbass. And this is, of course, also the place where 8 years ago, almost to the day, Viktor Yanukovych, that ousted president of Ukraine, fled. He fled to Rostov when the Maidan revolutionaries in Kiev ousted him from power. So this is a city that's always been very closely linked to the Donbass. There are many thousands of sort of Donbass people who live there, but an extraordinary absence of refugees. But I will say what I did see, both in Rostov and towards the border, was an extraordinary amount of military equipment. You know, a colleague and I, we were driving back from the border, and the opposite direction was coming an enormous convoy of Russian military trucks APCs and tanks. I filmed it, and the film went on for 2 minutes, 2 minutes worth of tanks driving past our car, an extraordinary number there. And they were going, I should say, right on the road to Donetsk, into the Donetsk People's Republic, into that part of eastern Ukraine. So a very ominous sign, I thought, at the time.
And in Rostov, do you see military equipment? Do you see uniforms in Rostov? When we talked last week, I asked you about Moscow, and you said not much. If those uniforms exist, they'll be in Rostov. Are they there?
Oh, they are. They are absolutely there. There are soldiers everywhere in the city. This is very much a staging point. This is where sort of the whole operation to clear the Donbass that Putin has now allowed himself by recognizing these republics will be sort of undertaken from. And I will say that that there was a great deal of sort of visual evidence that something was afoot down there.
And we move from Rostov, which is either a staging area or a theatrical presentation. We're unclear at this point. Back to Moscow. For weeks, Felix, we've been discussing the media in Moscow and how the Moscovites are being prepared for a possible conflict. Has there been any change in the television or the radio or the newspapers in these last days?
I think certainly in these last few days, since Putin mounted his quite extraordinary address on Monday night, you know, where he essentially took a swing at the very idea of Ukraine as an independent state. That was a sort of a hugely sort of something of a watershed moment, I think, for the state sort of PR, for its propaganda operation in this crisis. It was an extraordinary moment that really signaled the depth of sort of what Putin is willing to sort of allow himself in this crisis. It was really, really quite a moment. I think we got to the point there where we really sort of can't exclude anything. The Russian government really is sort of ready for anything. And, you know, I've been very sort of I've been very skeptical of this whole invasion story throughout, John, in our calls. But I'm very much correcting myself now. I think this thing is very real and very alarming. If we talk about sort of what sort of state TV is showing, then in the last few days, yes, I think we've definitely seen a dialing up of the rhetoric. You know, we saw there was a very sort of widely commented on graphic, certainly commented on by the journalist community, the foreign journalist community in Moscow, aired on state TV today, which basically sort of it was almost a map of sort of explaining why, in their view, Ukraine was not a legitimate country. You know, which bits had been taken from Russia, which bits from Poland, which bits had been given by Stalin, which bits had been given by Lenin. It was an extraordinary sort of statement of intention, I think, for what Russia might be planning to do with Ukraine now.
Another former part of the Soviet Union empire is Belarus. And there's a headline in Moscow Times pointing to a story that is in front of us, but you can't see because of Lukashenko and his arrangement with the Kremlin. The Russian military has deployed into Belarus for exercises and continues. Is the opinion that Belarus is now part of the Russian Federation being acquired, or has its governance changed in some important fashion?
Well, it's hard to say, I think. You know, this concession that sort of Belarusian troops are going to remain Russian troops are going to remain in Belarus for the foreseeable future. On the one hand, this could be something that the Russians have aimed for. But on the other hand, I think Lukashenko has an interest in that as well. He is holding later this month a constitutional referendum on to sort of to provide for his own sort of transfer of power in the future and sort of shore up his informal control over the country, at least. And it's likely that Russian troops could help him put down any future waves of civil unrest. You know, Russian troops are very much the ultimate kind of guarantor of his power. On the other hand, you know, we see things like the Belarusian foreign ministry said that it's not going to recognize the Donbass republics, which is what Putin did. Now, that would be an interesting move because it would imply sort of still a reasonable degree of foreign policy independence from Moscow in Minsk. So I think it's very hard to make generalizations at this time, but I think certainly Lukashenko right now is in the weakest position sort of vis-a-vis Moscow he's ever been in. He's very, very profoundly dependent on Russia at the moment.
Just quickly, Felix, the remarks made by President Putin in his address to the nation included claims that were stunning, the one about genocide, the one about the neo-Nazis. Is that being echoed in the media as well? Or are those terms being repeated?
Oh, well, this has been a long-standing sort of staple of Russian propaganda on Ukraine. You know, the idea that sort of Ukraine is sort of a fascist junta controlled by neo-Nazis. They go back to the 40s when a certain stripe of Ukrainian nationalists did indeed collaborate with Hitler. And they sort of spin that into this kind of, you know, ludicrous fantasy about all Ukrainians being fascists, you know. That's been a staple of Russian propaganda about Ukraine since about, you know, 2013, 2014. That's a standard. In terms of genocide, you know, this is a term that Putin specifically has used a lot recently, and he's used it consistently and he's used it regularly. This is a little bit new, and a new sort of addition to the lexicon, but it's an interesting one, because it is sort of the humanitarian justification that Putin has really used to sort of secure the annexation of these or the de facto annexation, I should say, of these republics in eastern Ukraine.
Final detail, Felix, in Moscow, do you see uniforms in Moscow on the streets or in the metro?
Well, you know, we're a long way from the border here, John, so I can't say we do. And you know what? As a broader point, I still don't think we see the sort of clamor for war here. We don't see any kind of a rally around the flag. There's no one, you know, I mean, there are people who are very pro annexing the Donbass, who are pro, you know, fighting Ukraine, but it's not a sort of a consensus position in the way that the Crimean annexation was 8 years ago. You know, this is a much more divided society that still fundamentally isn't that interested in sort of matters of geopolitics and imperial conquest right now. So I would be sort of cautious about that.
Felix Leit, CBS News, Moscow Times in Moscow. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.